Channel 2 Right, in continuation of Visit with Miss Daisy, this is the morning of the 10th of February, 71. Channel 2 Right, in continuation of Visit with Miss Daisy, this is the morning of the 10th of February, 72.
Clothes whenever she got ready.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have that experience?
No. She told me this. She wanted me to wash twice a month. Well, last month, she didn't bring the clothes there on Tuesday like she promised.
Mm-hmm.
I was to wash her clothes every Tuesday, every 2 weeks on Tuesday. Well, I went over there and I said to her like this, I said, look for your clothes yesterday. I said, but I didn't see them. She said, I didn't have nothing to wash. I said, oh. Well, I know that one. So. She had something to wash. She didn't have much as she wanted.
She did that once before, too.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
She did. So I come on home. And I ain't said nothing else to her about them. So, one time, I had them washing, had them over there. Then she said, I washed them like day and night. She sent Isabel over there to pick them up. Well, don't go back and tell her they ain't ready. On back the door. So that next morning, I went over there. I said, "Oh, I see I come at your clothes." Last night I said they wasn't ready. I said some of them wasn't even dry. She said, "Well, I didn't know you was gonna iron." So when I got them ironed. I carried them over there too. She said, why did you bring these clothes? I said, well, I was through with them, so I brought them on. She said, you're not the problem. I was going to send Isaiah them. I said, well, when I washed the floor, Isaiah wasn't here. I said, you said Isaiah wasn't here. And, I said, I didn't know whether he was here or not. No. I said, he ain't here. I said, so you got your clothes. I'm through with them. Just like that. So, I think it's Tuesday. I was over there this week. She said, I ain't done nothing today. I said, there wasn't much you could do. She said, I just laid around and slept. And sat by the fire. And she ain't had no fire. When I was over there, when I left there, Miss Myers, she was leaning up on the heater with both hands on the heater, just like that. And I never said one word. But I just looked and thought to myself, what you want with that big heater and no fire? No, I don't believe it was a spark of fire. And that little old room was just as cold. I thought, God, if you don't put some fire inside, you're going to get pneumonia here and nobody won't know it till you're dead. So we ought to have some fire in there. When I left there, I see that good fire. And when I left there, she's laying up on the heater just like that. With both hands on top of the heater.
She run out of kerosene.
No. The man filled it up the other day. I seen him up there. And she told me, he filled the tank up. I said, well, you won't have to worry about that no more in a long, long time. She said, no. I think she said it cost $11.40. It was $11 and something for him to fill up the tank. And she didn't have no fire there yesterday.
Had no fire yesterday?
Mm-mm. It was yesterday evening. I went over there to see it.
Well, it was cold and rainy yesterday.
Cold, rainy, and wet. That's what I'm talking about. But when I left out, she was standing up by the heater with her both hands up on the heater, just like that. And you know there wasn't no fire. One thing I don't think this is ever learned how to operate that thing good.
No.
That's what I don't think. Every once in a while, James, he goes over there, show her how to do it, and what to do, and he cleaned it, set out it, and everything. So I just don't think she know what to do with it. Well, I know what to do with mine, and I sure keeps me a fine.
That's what she ought to have.
That's what she needs.
She knows how to use a wood fire.
Mm-hmm.
And she don't have to worry with that.
Mm-hmm.
If it goes out, she knows how to start it.
Mm-hmm.
Benjamin, he's been everywhere, hasn't he?
Some of my grandson. He's been in many places. Sometimes he's down here in Miami. Once last year, he was sitting over there in Fort Lauderdale. Next time I know anything about him, he's been gone back to fit for Virginia. That's where he lives. In Virginia, I don't know where he is now, but he's been around, and he like it.
He like it.
He like it.
Well, I just thinking, Benjamin been so many places, he just have something tell you all the time.
Mm-hmm. He say he gonna stay there till he make a career. He said, when I come out, so I'll be able to take care of myself.
Yeah.
I said, Benjamin, that's a good thought. I said, you getting along all right now? He said, yes, ma'am, and I love it. He said, I love my job. I said, that's what makes you happy. That's what makes you want to stick there. You like the job. Mm-hmm.
Now, when you see him, Miss Daisy, he tells you things.
Yes, sir. You see, when he was down here, in September, to his granddaddy's funeral, that's when he told me that.
Now, does he tell you about these places where he's been?
Yeah, he tells me. these places he's been, but you know none of us can't keep up with him but his sister. She's the only one who can keep up with these places.
Yeah.
Where he's been. My goodness, I would get him fast as he can.
Yeah.
But she don't. She killed him. You can ask her anything. Elizabeth, where did Benjamin say he was sitting 50 pounds? She said he was in sitting 50 place then. I said, well, since that time, Grandma, he's been so many places. Then she started naming the places where he was sitting 50 time and sitting 50 month. He was in sitting 50 place. That's a smart young one. I guess you don't have a child to take after.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess you're going to have now like a...
Is that right?
She's got three boys and a girl. I tell her, I say, all yours going to be like mine. Ain't worth a dime to you. Never have a dime to offer you. If they see you, they want to borrow stuff.
You know, they gotta, it takes them a long time to learn about that.
Mm-hmm.
That they ought to have a little extra themselves, you know, to hand out to their people.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a long time to learn that, doesn't it?
They do.
Seem like it.
Well, some of them don't never learn it, do they?
I don't think any of Bess's did.
Don't think what?
Bess's. None of them ever learned it.
Some of Bess's Jackson? Oh, yes. Them boys. They send her money every year, twice, I know. They send her money Christmas time. They send her money on her birthday.
Oh, do they?
Mm-hmm. Well, now you see, they frustrated him for die. She said he told his wife, so I want you to forget my mother. So always remember her birthday and Christmas. And do you know she keeps it up?
Is that right?
Yeah, but his wife keeps it up.
Is that right?
She sends her money every birthday. She sends her money every Christmas. Well, now this last son that died, she said he never was much good to her. He never was much help to her. She said he had so many children, and his wife, she was not well. And then he had grandchildren. She said he ain't had nothing. He ain't had nothing again. Well, the grandchildren, they ain't had nothing. But the Zebby, he didn't forget, and his wife ain't forgotten. I felt kind of bad for the other day when this last boy died. And I said, well, how you feeling today? She said, I don't feel so good, Miss Davis. I was just thinking, I ain't got no help. I said, well, don't think about that. I says, plenty of folks ain't got no help. I said, I ain't got no help. I said, but I ain't got grieved by it. I ain't. She said, I used to have somebody. If I got any need, I'd send Tom. Tell him to send me some. Send me some money. And I would get it. So, but I ain't got nobody now to ask for nothing. I said, Bessie, you ain't learnt yet. Nothing stays. Things come and things go. And something else takes its place. She said, yes. I know that. I said, now you quit thinking about it. You ain't got nobody. I said, because you already know that. I said, then you ought to have been thinking a long time ago it would come a day you wouldn't have nobody. So far as you know about it. I don't like that kind of stuff. You just sit there and think about you ain't got nobody to ask for nothing, ain't got nobody to give you nothing. First thing you know, he crazy as a bed bug, and they be dead resting.
You
guys.
No,
I'm
not.
Huh? I don't worry, but I tell you, I ain't got nobody to help me. I know. All of mine most is living. I said, but it just rest to be dead, the good is to me. So I got now to say, Mom, here's a quarter. Now. She said, yeah, but you see, mine wasn't like yours. I said, no, it wasn't. I said, twice a year, you always thought about you. I said, mine don't think about me that time in the year. Well, now, you see, she missed that them 2 days more so than she do any other thing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it makes me feel like she just remembered the handout she get birthday and Christmas. Wasn't so much about it, living. And that's just what I get while I live.
Yeah, she didn't see him much.
No, so she didn't see him. Well, I guess I better get to my house.
You know, I used to think about that. Miss Bessie's got such a nice place down there and plenty of room. And she loves company.
Oh, yes.
And they could have come down there and just spent the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they couldn't stay that long, but they could have come and stayed.
Mm-hmm. They ain't got time to fool with you, Mr. Meyer. There ain't enough going on around where me and Bessie is.
I think that's part of it. They got to have a whole lot of racket, haven't they?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. They ain't got enough room.
Well, I tell you what.
Let me tell you. Now, Aaron's the one I knew the best. And Aaron always had something to talk about.
Yes, sir. He's a talker. Then another thing about Aaron, he knew what to talk about. He can talk much trash as you want to hear, and then he can talk business. You know, Aaron, he's been around right small. You see, he brought it to that something concerning the farmers, something.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he's wrong. They kept him in that for the long. I told him it's a shame they couldn't get him in shape to put him in the army. But he's been around, he's been in Georgia, he's been all around. Good extent. Now they was in Georgia once camping out there, and he said that they couldn't have no land because they were just out there on pine straw and water. And he said somewhere or another, some of them heard some crawling in the leaves, and to the rattlesnake this big
crawling
up between them, some of them. So some of them called the man that guarded the tent at night and told him, say, you better shine your light. There's something in here. So he was just like that. You know, the unfastened thing, I don't know what it was, and he shined that light. This is Nate. He was going up between some of the vaults, and they couldn't move. I said to God, I said, stay right where you is. Let him pass on by. There's nothing I can do about it now. Aaron said, he was about 2 men from him. He said, he lay down while the light shined. So he watched him. He was see the situation. He said, that's the biggest snake he ever seen in his life. I said, was he crawling in the water? He said, yep. I said, but he kept straight on through. And then he stopped. And just as soon as he got that fur from the men, said that God shot him. Shot his head clean off. I said, that's another time I'd have fainted. I said, he just must have shot me. He said, he didn't must have shot me. He said, I said, of course I was glad he was that far from me. I said, well, what did them men do, what he was passing? He said, they didn't do nothing. So when he shot him, they got up and looked at him. I think they even said that thing was 15 feet long. I said, what did he do with it? He said, I don't know what he done with him. I said, carried him with me. I said, did you sleep any more that night? He said, yes, I went back to sleep after a while. And I said, damn.
Now that's the sort of thing that happened to Aaron. That happened to Aaron right up here in Georgia.
Yeah. Right up there. He's up there. I think he was out there in Augusta. He was somewhere. But he was in the government's care. They had him out there. Bunch of them.
Yeah. Well, now, if you had Aaron or Benjamin around every now and then, that'd liven things up, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a liven thing up. Now, I mean, Aaron, now he can talk, he tell me things. Then he knows how to do a lot of things around the house.
Oh, does he?
Yes, and when he's here, he do lots of things.
Yeah.
For me around the house, like fixing things.
Yeah. Well, you like to see him coming.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to see him anytime, but I don't see him much.
You can't get off?
Who? Can't get off?
Uh-huh.
Who?
Aaron?
No, I don't guess so. I ain't. Well, he sent me a nice car. That's all. I hadn't heard since he left.
Yeah. He don't have so far to come, Miss Davis.
Mm-mm.
Well, now, Elizabeth, she can do a lot of things.
Oh, yeah. She can read and write good. Figures, she got a pretty good head.
Yeah.
Yeah, she didn't get what we all wanted to have. We wanted to go to college.
Yeah.
But she'd rather marry and go finish up there.
Yeah. So now, she's got plenty to do where she is.
She's got a plenty to work for.
If any helping done, you'd be helping her.
That's right.
Well, now, she comes over now and then.
Oh, she comes once or twice a week.
Well, that much?
She don't stay long, but she comes.
She wasn't there yesterday.
No, she wasn't there yesterday. But she sent them boys down here late yesterday evening to see how I was with.
Oh, did she?
Getting along. I don't know. She might have been feeling kind of bad. I don't know.
Them boys, can they drive?
They ride with another boy.
Yeah.
That guy.
And she works.
Her?
She work every day?
Work every day.
Yeah.
See, she works at that medical center.
Yeah.
You know, I asked about Reverend Taylor's son.
Yeah.
Somebody said they were going to bring him home last week, but they didn't. I was asking somebody about, I believe it was the pastor, said something about it. And I asked him, had he been around that? And he said, no, he hadn't been around there. I said, well, is he home? He said, no, he's not home. Not yet. I said, well, somebody said they're going to bring him home one day this week. It wouldn't be Monday, but it would be one day. He said they didn't bring him. So I haven't heard from him this week. I don't know how he's getting along.
He's not doing as good as they thought, maybe.
Hmm?
He's not doing as good as they thought he would, I guess.
No. No.
He about wore out, ain't he?
Yeah. Just about wore out.
And mean to boot.
Mm-hmm. You can't do nothing much with things in the way I can't do nothing with human.
Not much.
But some of them was wondering. I was at first until I thought, why would they take him to Williston?
Yeah.
To the hospital.
I'll tell her, come in, mom. Oh, she going out trying to, yeah. Daisy, I got to go down and feed the horses. Would you ride home?
I've got to go home.
Would you ride with me?
You going this way?
Yeah.
Well, I'll go with you, Pete. Or you send me home and put me out, and you go on feeding your horses. Well, I enjoyed my visit.
Well, I did too.
Mm.
No, I thought I'd give a little hay. I meant to give him some last night, and I don't know. I got sort of feeling sorry for myself.
Feeling sorry for yourself?
Yes, and forgot it.
I want you to look at that apron, guy. That's not the prettiest thing.
That is pretty, see?
That's
I wish you had some pretty things.
I know it. I know it.
You see, that's all thing you got, that old stuff like that.
Oh, she's been over to my house two or three times with different soups on. Not just this, different soups.
Well, somebody give them to her.
Yeah, I guess they did. And she paid for it with her money on the old woman. Wasn't going to be much now.
Yeah, they see. I'm looking for my hat. Out here? Here it is. Turn it off.
I've got a bread recipe and you cook it in a coffee can. Now,
you got a bread recipe?
Yeah. Mel has one and you cook it in one of those coffee cans.
Bread in a coffee can?
Yeah, it's, I have What you do, you just make up your batter and divide it in half and put half in each of a pound coffee can, and then you just bake it right in the can. And let's see. Put the lid on for a while and let it rise. Then you take the lid off and bake it. And she said it's real fun. It comes out, you just tap it along the sides and then just slides out. And it bakes, you know, just real golden brown and all.
In the coffee can.
And you said he thought it'd ruin the coffee can. And she said, no, you can use it over and over again. Then for some reason it doesn't hurt the can. The bread comes, you know, it comes out of those little ridges or indentions.
Well, now, are you getting into some interesting things this time?
Yeah, I'd go along fine Saturday morning. I just boom along. Because I had this idea, when Jim comes home from Lums, and he keeps his, I guess you'd call it equilibrium, and he reports, you know, with a sense of humor, then the things that happen there, you know, they stay light. But when he starts worrying about people, you know, when he starts reacting, then he loses, you know, light touch, and it's no longer reporting. It's just griping.
Freudian.
Yeah, Freudian.
Well, I don't know what it is. Well, now. But he does have the light touch, right?
Yeah, now. Yeah, most of the time he does. Right. And it's just, well, the latest one was Gail, and she was cutting up with one of the customers, an older man who came in with several young fellows, and they were kidding her, and she was joking back with him. And the older man said he was, as soon as he'd saved up enough money, he's going to start a cut glass bra factory. Gail just looked at him. He said, that way if any fella start messing with you, he'll cut his hand. And Gail just looked at him and put his beard out and says, I wouldn't want him to cut his hand. And that just tickles Jim to no end when she does things like that. It just kills him.
Oh, it does.
Yeah, he just thinks it's funny. And she does it so quickly, just absolutely no thought at all. She's ready to come back with something like that all the time.
Yeah. And that's what they expect.
Oh, yeah. It's just like, you know, when Bob comes to a family reunion, they expect him to cut up.
Yeah.
But that's what they expect of Gail, and she almost always provides it.
And the subject's always the same.
Just about, you know.
It's the one and only.
Yeah, just about. If it's not just something the customer has done, then it usually will boil down to sex one way or another. I don't know. Well, I guess Gemini, you know, that's about 90% of the talk. You know, that's, you know, it comes down to joking about it or cutting up or something like that. And you know, I don't know if it's normal or not, but it happens in the dorms. And Jim says, let's see. Well, he hadn't. It's been quite a while since he's gotten together just with guys. But he says when there are just the guys there working, when they're cleaning up lunch, he said that's what they talk about, you know, just joking about it and being as gross as they can be.
Rick has this little report. It's most unexpected, you know. It's almost like a windfall when Rick sends something in, you know. And this last one is really, really surprising from that bunch of cutthroats you see down there on that grocery crew. I'll hand it to you as you look at it. It is surprising. It is surprising. Sudan, I don't know. I just don't know. You know, the institutions, govern all that. The adhesion, you see, in the subject and all like that. And you see, that's it. What you're looking at is institution, and it's kind of hard to differ from it, I'd say, or take another tack.
Yeah, because you're part of it, and
is hunting or football or sex. They're pretty stereotype subjects, aren't they? That answers. Now, at your writing school, your horse label. You know, I have always had to probe a lot, but I've never done too well at it. And now it stuck in my mind. See, you said that Rick, Jim said he could see pretty quickly out of the sunshine that about all they didn't actually have a horse, they just fed them and cleaned up after them.
Yeah.
And it'd be nice to have something like Mike Kilton. Well, I think Mike Kilton is clear out of the possibility or need. See, he's a master.
Yeah.
He's too good. You don't want to be that good.
Well, Saturday, I saw somehow where you can get into it, because I went out there. They were supposed to have a little 4-H Western riding meeting. The two, Marion McLeod and some other woman, came out, and they were going to give sort of advice and lessons to the 4-H members, because there's a show coming up next weekend. Well, none of the kids showed up because I guess it was cold while they were sick. But this one woman did, and I didn't get her name. I got it, and I forgot it. And Marion McLeod came out. And that was the most fascinating 2 hours I've ever spent. just talking to them. Or they talked. And the one woman, the younger woman, is... she was very attractive, and I guess she was around in her 30s, I guess. And she's training a quarter horse for an endurance trial. But anyway, I got more. She talked and all, and talked about Bubba and how to get him to do things that he's not doing. Well, then Marion McLeod showed up, and I'd seen her before. I didn't know who she was. But she's a little short woman and kind of dumpy. And she has short hair like mine. And she talked with a cigarette dangling out of the corner of her mouth the whole time. You know, while she talks, the cigarette just flips up and down.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, when it gets a long ash, you know, it falls off. And she'll take it out of her mouth and draw on it. And then she'll throw it away and lie another. And it dangles out of her mouth while she talks. The whole time, it just never interrupted it. A cigarette just stuck in the corner, waggled up and down. But she has been in, I wouldn't say she's a professional like Mike Tilton, or she may be, I don't know. She works in the chemistry department at school. I don't know, as a secretary or a lab worker. But she, from what she said, she knows some chemistry, knows quite a bit. And she knows the professors at school, and her husband's a farrier, Phil McLeod. And she's been working with horses since she's 14. I guess kind of like Barbara. She started out. And it was just one incident, one horse after another, while she stood there and talked. Just this other woman would mention her horse being sick, and Marion would talk about, you know, 10 horses in this area belonged to people she knew, and she knew the horses, and these peculiar things were happening to them, and she just gave case after case after case of, you know, these horses. And then she got on to the woes of transporting horses from state to state, brand inspections and vaccinations, and just for an hour, just solid. She just talked and talked and talked. She's in the 4-H. You know, I had kind of a bad opinion of 4-H, I guess, from that. But and she's in the horse world, and she's not a Mike Tilton, but I didn't know she was there. And she talks.
Now, she talked with horses.
Oh, yeah. And people. And they talked about some fellow named Jay who used to beat his horses when he got mad at him, and he blinded 2 or 3, just knocked their eyes out beating them. And they had one authenticated case that he rode a horse to death. He just rode her and left her on the side of the road to die. And he used to tie their heads up in trees and leave them for a day. So she talked people too. And what she was doing that I didn't catch for a while, but she was running through the history of the horse shows in this area. She'd started out in Illinois, I think, and seen the Midwest. She said it was an industrial area and people had money, and she saw the horse business grow. You know, people start, they had money, they could buy horses. She said she and her husband, he was working as a shipping clerk in some company, and she was working in another job. And they were making something like $20,000 a year, and they had 2 or 3 horses. Just married, just out of school. And she said she just saw it grow. That in the beginning, the horse shows, there'd be 1 or 2 good horses, and they'd walk away with all the ribbons and everything. And gradually, you'd notice more and more good horses coming in. And pretty soon, instead of having classes of 10, you'd have classes of 20. And then she went out to Colorado, and she talked about some incidents there. And then they came to Florida. And she says she's seen the same thing happen. And she talked about this man, Jay, who was one of the first. He had the good horses in the beginning. And then she said, now you have the classes where you have to have 2 shifts, you know, for all the kids to show their horses. And she says she's seen, you know, she kind of put it that way, and then she went into the different horses that she's seen, and the changes, and the horses that are around there, and the people. I didn't get all of it. she talks fast. Just real, just one thing after another, and she never stops. But it was, I just sat there, oh no. All this time.
She sounded authentic.
Yeah. She's not, I don't think you'd call her country, because I don't know whether she rides Western or English, but she didn't sound country. I mean, it's a different way of talking, I guess. She sounds well like she is. She's connected with the university. And I'm not sure if her husband is now or not, but she's worked in veterinary schools. And
Phil's a farrier. We've had him out here.
I know.
He does a lot of these big farms.
Yeah.
He used to get in the week and I talk with him. He talks too. It'd be something to have.
Oh, Lord, she talks.
He talks like that.
She talks about her first year in a practical vet training program. And she said what it was. It came down to, you know, cleaning and washing bottles and feeding and all. That was your practical vet training. And she said once a year they'd go out and brand range cattle. They'd horn brand it. And she said, now these are range cattle. She said all the time and the whole year that they saw a human being is when you came out there and took their calves away from them and roped them and marked their horns. And she said, and you know, they weren't too happy to see a human being then. So she said, there she was. She's a little woman. I mean, she's small. She's kind of fat, but she's short. And she just go out there on those big old horses. Her rope range cow. Can't imagine it. But that's what steered away from veterinary training, from being a vet. She settled for chemistry and horse training besides instead.
But you know, I think constantly about getting swamped, getting tied down, you see. You get a job and it holds you. You got no leeway.
Yeah.
And you're just lost. You're just lost. And I think in the old days, oh, certainly. You see now, they talk about job security. That's just something recent. And the old days, there was so much mobility. They didn't expect to work solid and day in, day out, month in, month out. So they weren't tied. They weren't tied.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't get lost, you see. It's almost like being damned in Dante's lower world. Now, you just get stuck where you don't see anything and you can't move. Now, I see so much of that. I see so much of my effort has gone into teaching people to do things that they never use. They never do. It's just lost. It's perfectly lost. Now, that's more like it, you see. I just think, in a way, see, you don't, whatever you get, wherever you are, you don't take that, and you don't get stuck there. You move. You keep moving.
Hmm.
And as I see it now, the greatest virtue is mobility, is being able to get unstuck. And promptness and all like that, you see, are the greatest handicap. It almost damns you before you start. I mean, your mind has just simply got to jerk loose just constantly. Well, anyhow, on the horse world, that's good enough case for me. And you see, in your critical piece, you can say all those things. You can say what goes on out here without any abstractions.
Yeah.
And then all these other things. You see, you can just hit it hard and make you know. I'd stay rough and not bother about finishing all the sentences. And being nice. I noticed a few misspelled words in your... That looks to me like that's normal. Shakespeare couldn't spell. I don't know why everybody should be able to spell. That's like being prompt. It's such a minor virtue.
Yeah, you can always go back and spell your words right.
Well, who in the hell cares whether you go back or not? Who cares? It's just a Sunday school virtue. So much of it is, it just tires the mind. The hell was spelling right? What in the world do you need to spell right for?
You want to say for Joe and I? Well, you can say for Joe and I.
Yes.
I noticed that more than anything else, not in yours, but in everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What difference does it make? Well, I mean, now I'm not talking about children. I'm talking about scholars, people who are scholarly. You see, that's who I'm talking about. I don't have any dealings with the others.
That sounds like Sue and Sally talk. And then
yeah.
That sounds like the way they talk.
Yeah.
Just one case after the other.
One case after another.
Yeah.
Just right in time.
You just live it.
Oh, yes. Now, you see, you are in a mentality there that's considerably different from the countryside.
Yeah. Yeah. I can just tell it right off. It's just the world is different than it. Now, I would assume that they deal with the countryside, but I don't know how they how they do it, how Phil does it. But it is different.
Now, you see, basically, I wouldn't be interested in McLeod or his wife. I wouldn't. Because I'm not interested in horses.
Yeah.
They just don't interest me. But you see, I haven't resolved anything. I'm still right in the middle of it. Just holding on and being jerked around, you see. You know, I just gave him some hay. Cookie's horses are right personal. They speak to you.
Oh,
but you know, that Missy comes right up there and talks and sticks her head over the fence, and she's the first one. I'll use this. That's the only horse I've seen like that. Now, whether you lead with the left or the right, see, it's beyond me. Look at that beautiful little Tom Kidd train.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd be the one. You know, I think that's it. I think that's it. They're reporting now. I got those two beautiful little freshman classes, and they read and understand. And I worked with them on that displaced person. I got into that for the first time. Let me go into it with you just a minute. They write better on the test than doing anything else because I frame the questions and you know, work them out what to do ahead of time. What I said was, leave out all this little discussing that you've been doing and putting in all the footnotes, and pick me shortly up when she says she overhears through the crack. You see, if they're going to get their notice. And I didn't realize what it was. I can't see with or without. You see, I didn't realize it had been built up. It's a tremendous scene, you see. She goes home and they pack and go off in that car and she has a stroke and drive. Well, I knew, of course, that I could see some of the ingredients of it, that there's people just come and go, you see, being fired out there. They're not fired so much. They stay a year or two and then leave, just almost by consent. And I don't know why O'Connor would want to build it up so. And on top of making it dramatic, she gives us a stroke, lets her die, and distorts the whole thing in the front seat of the car. I still don't see why she wants to do that. There's not that much to it. Well, you see, she saw Mrs. McIntyre and the priest walking in the yard, and she didn't want to face them, so she went into the feed house, a single room shack piled on one side with flowered sacks of scratch feed. There were spilled oyster shells in one corner and a few old dirty calendars on the wall, advertising calf feed and various patent medicine remedies. One showed a bearded gentleman in a frock coat holding up a bottle, and beneath his feet was the inscription, I've been made regular by this marvelous discovery. Miss Shortley had always felt close to this man, as if he was some distinguished person she was acquainted with. But now her mind was on nothing but the dangerous presence of the priest. She stationed herself at the crack. Now, Miss McIntyre says, you see, I've decided to give Mr. Shortley his month's notice. The priest scarcely seemed to hear her. He was so busy wiggling his finger inside the wire. Miss Shortley sat down on an open sack of laying mash with a dead thump that sent feed dust clouding up around her. She found herself looking straight ahead at the opposite wall where the gentleman on the calendar was holding up his marvelous discovery. But she didn't see him. She looked ahead as if she saw nothing whatsoever. And then she rose and ran to her house. Her face was an almost volcanic red. She opened all the drawers and dragged out boxes and old battered suitcases from under the bed. She began, I don't know how to read this, you see. I don't think I'm reading it right. I think you just read it like the Reader's Digest. I don't think it's oral like Twain. It's not written to be heard. It's not oral speech. She began to unload the drawers into the boxes. All the time without pause, without taking off the sun hat she had on her head. She set the two girls to doing the same. When Mr. Shortley came in, she did not even look at him, but merely pointed one arm at him while she packed with the other. Bring the car around to the back door, she said. You ain't waiting to be fired. Mr. Shortley had never in his life doubted her omniscience. He perceived the entire situation in half a second, and with only a sour scowl, retreated out the door and went to drive the automobile around to the back. Now, you've got one detail after another, and what I asked him to do was leave out all the comment and just put in the details and let the event get the event into their prose. Well, they knew what I had in mind. See, I can't do it either. I'm not a expert by any means. But and some of them sort of got a feel for it, and I didn't realize how she had built it up. Mrs. McIntyre had changed since the displaced person had been working for her, and Miss Shortley had observed the change very closely. She'd begun to act like somebody who was getting rich secretly, and she didn't confide in Miss Shortley the way she used to. Miss Shortley suspected that the priest was at the bottom of it, and you see the way she goes. Now, the niggers, Miss Shortley takes up for the niggers. That's what the judge said, Mrs. McIntyre said, and looked at her with approval. The judge was her first husband. Now let me see. They saw the priest yes, it is. Now it suddenly came to Mrs. Shortley that he was trying to persuade her to bring another Polish family onto the place. With two of them here, there would be almost nothing spoken but Polish. Now it's building up. The Negroes would be gone, and there would be the two families against Mr. Shortley and herself. And she began to imagine a war of words, to see the Polish words and the English words coming at each other, stalking forward. Not sentences, just words, gabble, 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 flung out high and shrill and stalking, you see. Now, hell, she doesn't, O'Connor doesn't stop at anything. And she started from that day to read a Bible with a new attention. She pored over the apocalypse. and began to quote from the prophets, and before long she'd come to a deeper understanding of her existence. She saw plainly that the meaning of the world was a mystery that had been planned, and she was not surprised to suspect that she had a special part in the plan because she was strong. She saw that the Lord God Almighty had created strong people to do what had to be done. Now his visits irked her, you see. On the last one, he went about picking up feathers off the ground. And it was on a Sunday afternoon that she had her vision. She'd gone to drive in the cows for Mr. Shortley, who had a pain in his knee, and she was walking slowly through the pasture, arms folded, eyes on the distant low-lying clouds that looked like rows and rows of white fish washed up on a great blue beach. She paused after an incline to heave a sigh of exhaustion, for she had an immense weight to carry about, and she was not as young as she was. You see, her heart was hurting her. Suddenly, while she watched, the sky folded back in two pieces like the curtain on a stage, and a gigantic figure stood facing her. It was the color of the sun and all. And a voice, there resonant, said the one word, prophesy. She stood there, tottering slightly, but still upright, eyes shut tight, and her fist clenched, and a straw sun hat low on her forehead. The children of wicked nations will be butchered, she said, in a loud voice. Legs where arms should be, foot to face, ear in the palm of the hand, who will remain whole? That's Revelation. Presently she opened her eyes. The sky was full of white fish cat lazily on, you see. And right then, the priest and Miss McIntyre go across, and she steps into the feed room. So you have it's just tremendous build up that I had no notion was there. No notion was there.
Way back.
Yeah.
Yes. And then she uses all those forbidden mechanical means of building it up. You see that vision and all that. Yeah. Well, it's a commonplace thing.
She ended up in the cataclysm of stroke.
Yeah.
She looks into another country.
Well. Now, Ms. McIntyre does the same thing. She falls apart. But she does it a little bit more calmly. The first thing that unsettles her, apparently, is the pole. The Mr. Gizak wants to bring his daughter to the back or something and marry one of those niggers. And that sticks in her mind. And it eats.